Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and this is our second Thanksgiving episode for you. This whole month, I'm focusing on people who care for others, people that can show us how to be grateful year-round. I'm trying to apologize less for these episodes and intros sounding a bit rushed, but it seems like I'm going to be editing these down to the last minute each week. I'm still making it happen, though, so please keep tuning in, and I hope we will keep getting better each week. We have an extra special Thanksgiving Day episode planned, as well as a Christmas episode that I am super excited for. I hope to tease more information before we get closer to recording, but all I'll say for now is that our Christmas guest definitely helped to trek the vote. It's finally been declared that Joe Biden is the president-elect, but that doesn't appear to have calmed down anything across the country. The economy did take a pretty big jump today, as I write this on the 9th, but who knows if that'll last. I think a lot of us has figured out that the stock market is more of a barometer of how rich people are feeling than about any truth about how the world is actually running. Since the country seems to be getting more optimistic, or at least those with money seem to be, then what are we doing to help those less fortunate? That seems to be a topic a lot of people want to avoid during COVID, with the government giving us a single $1,200 check to cover all of the businesses that have shut down. You'd think that they thought everything was going just fine. Our unemployment rate is supposedly down to 6.9% again, but that doesn't take into account those who have just stopped looking for work, or how about all those who have drained their savings trying to survive on less than full-time work? Personally, I'm very concerned about the restaurant industry and all that they employ, as we've already seen drastic closures and we're headed into the winter months with no outdoor seating and COVID cases topping 130,000 per day as of writing this on the 9th. While the deaths may have dropped, the fear has not, and we're not likely to get back to life as normal anytime soon. As winter is already showing itself in many parts of the country, I hope that we can take the time to be thankful for what we have and think of ways that you can help share with others. The gratitude you receive for your kind deeds can do your heart much more good than the cup of coffee you give up in exchange. Before we quickly get to the sponsors, I want to thank Camille Tamala for joining me this week. She's the Executive Director of Operation Nightwatch Portland, which has been helping Portland's unhoused community since 1981. They seek to provide an escape from isolation while also providing a cup of coffee, a meal, and mental health support, even when such other agencies have had to close down. Living without shelter can be one of the loneliest experiences in life, feeling shunned, rejected, and with little hope. Operation Nightwatch is there to help provide not just a meal or a blanket, but to listen to their stories and give them a caring shoulder when it's needed most. Camille has spent nearly a decade driving change in the community. She has taken to heart the need to personally connect and embrace those she's trying to help, as well as bringing her personal drive and passion to the fight, and we're honored to have her on our show today. Before we get to the interview, here's a brief rundown of our sponsors. First and foremost, I want to thank all of you personally for your support. Just listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep striving to provide the best content I can each week. If you have the means and would like to contribute personally, please don't forget about our Patreon page, where you will get access to exclusive content and deals just for our dedicated fans. As for the other sponsors, Awaken Vapes was the first of the Awaken brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only, high-terpene vape products since 2019. Genesis Farms has been making the highest quality medicinal RSO, among many other amazing products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And last but not least, the Caramel Corn Company, bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe to us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Also, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I know that every podcast says that, but it's because it really does help spread the word and visibility. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. All right, now, stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal. Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products made with love and care.
community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just a beginning to what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state, their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner both coming back for more. Find them on Facebook, Instagram, and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges soon.
Our new sponsor is the Carmel Corn Company. Carmel corn the way it was meant to be. Made from premium ingredients in small, handcrafted batches, and completely gluten-free. The flavors include original, roasted cashew, salted almond, mixed nut, white morsel macadamia, spicy sriracha, peanut butter, butterscotch, and my personal favorites, raspberry caramel apple and chocolate drizzle. I can't say enough how delicious this caramel corn is. I wouldn't buy it from any other source. You can find Carmel Corn Company products for sale at Portland area market of choice locations, and when it gets stocked back up, maybe it'll be online again. Visit www.carmelcorncompany.com and get more information today. Remember, buying local supports small businesses and keeps your money building your community.
Last but not least, Awakened Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vape pens since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines and no modern medical pills helped alleviate the symptoms. After having tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was actually a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. And despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban and then a global health crisis, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our three varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with that custom blended terpene effect. Check back at www.awakenvapes.com and be the first online orders of our high-demand Delta 8 cartridges coming in stock here soon. Use the coupon code PODCAST20 at checkout all this month for 20% off your entire order. That's PODCAST20 for 20% off.
Welcome to Awakened Exchanges. For those in our audience who are unfamiliar with you, why don't you tell us your name and a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, my name is Camille Tamala. I'm the executive director over at Operation Nightwatch, which is a nonprofit based in Portland that works with the unhoused community to provide nighttime hospitality.
And how did you first get involved with Operation Nightwatch?
I actually only recently stepped into the executive director position as of mid-July of this year. Prior to, I guess, everyone else's experience with COVID and employment, I actually didn't know much about Operation Nightwatch. It was just through research and an open position that kind of got me to Nightwatch. And I immediately just fell in love with the mission as soon as I heard about them and started that process.
And you've been working in the nonprofit sector for quite a while, though, haven't you?
Yeah. Basically, my whole professional life has been in the nonprofit world in both small and large organizations with either, which is really interesting, either youth-based nonprofits or nonprofits that are based around serving the unhoused community.
And how did you first get involved in the nonprofit sector? What led you down that path?
You know, it really started from a young age. From a young age, I just kind of realized that I was meant to do more, meant to be a part of something that was bigger than myself. And from a young age, I've always been helping people. Whether that was just someone that maybe didn't have friends at school or maybe someone that I ran into that just didn't have what they needed to like make ends meet. I actually started working with the unhoused community through like homeless outreaches when I was 10.
Wow.
And I guess that has just never changed.
Good for you. So you said you started reaching out to the unhoused or homeless communities when you were 10. Where was that at?
That was back home in Hawaii. So I was born and raised in Hawaii on the island of Oahu. And I'm not sure if many people know this, but it's known as paradise, but it's a really hard place to live. Minimum wage is really low. Cost of living is really high. There's intergenerational poverty, addiction, homelessness. And so it's just, it's a really hard place to be.
That's not what we normally associate with Hawaii. So how was it growing up in that?
It was really hard, actually. I come from a home and a family that addiction really kind of just crippled it from a young age. And I actually found refuge in the church where I started, like the homeless outreach. And I saw that there was restoration for the people around me. And I guess I grew up just dreaming that would happen for my own family. And it eventually did. As an adult, it did. But as a child, it was really hard. A lot of people don't understand and don't see the hardships that happen in Hawaii, whether that's because of a lack of resources, a lack of education, or just simply like a lack of money.
So through the church, you got involved. What was your, did you go to college afterwards or did you go straight into the nonprofit sector? How did your career path evolve?
Well, I graduated from high school and attended Hawaii Pacific University for about three and a half years. And then I actually got married to my ex-husband.
Oh.
And basically couldn't afford college anymore. The way that works is really interesting. When you graduate or when you get married and are in school, your estimated family contribution just like skyrockets. And so I couldn't actually afford to finish. And so at that time I worked in nonprofits, primarily youth-based nonprofits, summer camps, after school programs, that type of thing. But it was then that I kind of transitioned more into, I guess, a more professional role, working with the unhoused community, working with people in addiction, working with people whose families basically got destroyed because of those things. And then I ended up moving to the mainland, moving to California for school, where I basically was going to school with my ex-husband to become a pastor.
Really?
Seminary school. For a very conservative denomination. It's really interesting. It's a denomination where they assign you where you work after you're done with seminary school. And so I got assigned to Longview, Washington.
That is an interesting assignment. I've lived in Kelso,
That was really, really hard for me. And it was there that I ended up coming out, actually.
Wow.
And so I don't know if you know this, but if you're married to a guy and you're actually gay, that doesn't work out very well.
Yeah, I wouldn't guess so.
And it doesn't work out very well when you're a part of a really conservative denomination that's not affirming or accepting, really. So that was hard. That was after being a part of this particular church and this particular denomination really my entire life.
Do you mind if I ask what prompted the come out and finding that voice in yourself to step forward?
Yeah, actually, I had first come out when I was 19, just to my parents. And They basically told me it was going to be a phase, even though I knew it wasn't. And they told me that they loved me dearly, but they still wanted me to get married. I was already engaged at that point.
Oh, wow.
And so I was really young. I was like 19. So I didn't know really any better. And I thought that's what I was supposed to do. That was the expectation that people had for me, whether it was my parents, whether it was the church, whether it was my fiance at the time. And so I did it and I got married, and then ended up fast forward. I ended up in a place that was again, very conservative. Longview wasn't necessarily, like super horrible, but for me, it was very difficult. There's a lack of diversity that I was very much so used to coming from Hawaii and then California.
Yes.
And that was hard. I had not one friend in drivable distance. I don't have any family outside of Hawaii. So it was just really hard. I just felt really alone. I endured a couple of pretty like racist events in Longview, and that didn't help. I basically got kicked out of a restaurant for not being white. And then at a community meeting, I was told by a partnering agency that my opinion didn't matter because I wasn't from this country. So that wow. was hard. That was rough. And that was in like the end of 2018, beginning of 2019. Totally blindsided me. And I was actually driving from Longview to Portland 3 to 5 times a week, kind of for my own sanity, but I took up hot yoga, which was basically one of the only things that like saved me and like kept me sane in that time. And I think the final straw was that I had one of my employees that was like overseeing the church there, and along with all of its like outreach and social service programs. And one of my directors, her daughter had finally come out after dating her girlfriend for about 4 years, proposed to her girlfriend, and then asked me to marry them. And I think that was the final straw, was that because I was a part of this conservative denomination where I was like ordained and a pastor, I wasn't allowed to marry this couple. And for me, that was the breaking point in where I no longer could suppress my own identity and like my own sexuality. And I couldn't affirm this person who I knew did really no wrong because they were gay. So then I came out. I came out to my ex-husband. I came out to the church.
So that was the first time that you came out to him, even though you had told your parents before while you were engaged?
Kind of. Yes and no. I mean, I think he had an idea. There was a brief moment where we had broken up our engagement because I had feelings for a girl. But we never actually talked about it.
Gotcha.
And so I'm sure that it wasn't something that he really saw was real or something that I actually was struggling with. We just kind of swept it under the rug and just never talked about it again. And nobody knew really besides my parents and him that like anything was actually happening. Like that moment of doubt or uncertainty, nobody knew. And so when I had come out, it was a shock to really everyone. And that was really difficult.
Did you have support?
Yes and no. I had support. They just weren't like physically present.
Gotcha.
My family was very, very supportive and like apologized, and we've been able to like reconcile that, and they now understand that that was a lot of pressure that they put on me, even though ultimately, like, I definitely made the decision 100%. I take full responsibility. But they realized, I guess, the part that they played in it. And so they were really, really supportive. I went home like just to talk to my parents about it and my family before making any like decisions of what was going to happen, I guess. And then I had friends that were really supportive also. They just didn't live in Longview. So
then you were driving to Portland a fair amount at that point. You had just come out and your community was probably feeling fairly split. Is that when you decided to try and, is that when you moved down this direction?
Yeah. Basically, we decided that the marriage wasn't going to work. And so I started applying to really any and all jobs that were in the nonprofit sector in Portland. Unfortunately, there wasn't a whole lot of options. But also, fortunately, I got hired fairly quickly and worked for a nonprofit tech company that's based in Portland. And so that was really cool. I worked with basically like female-identifying, non-binary, and transgender youth. And like work to empower them and provide opportunity through tech.
So is that where you were involved with the STEM education and everything?
Yeah. And so that was really cool. And then I actually, this is another interesting thing. I decided to go back to school to finish my undergrad. And I transferred in as a senior, which again, not something I totally recommend. very difficult. But I chose to go to a very conservative school. And I finished my degree at George Fox.
Okay. I've heard of it through the billboards around here, but I haven't seen much beyond that.
Well, it was good and bad. A lot of my close friends went to George Fox and only had like raving reviews of it. The problem was that the way that the school, at least their traditional undergrad program, is created is with like a typical traditional undergrad student in mind. So most of their students have to live on campus, which I was not going to do because I was like older and returning to school.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting dynamic. Most students were very conservative. I still very much so love Jesus, but am not conservative at all. And so that was another area that we kind of like didn't really relate on. And then most of the students come straight from high school. So I was like 10 years older than them. But with that being said, I made some really good relationships with a couple of professors. And I didn't really have time anyway. I was working full time, going to school full time in person. I didn't have time to do traditional things. So that was, it was okay. And then, yeah. And so I just finished school actually this past August.
Congratulations.
Only a couple months now. Thanks. Which I don't know how my degree necessarily helps the work that I do, but my degree is in mathematics. So I like numbers.
That is a pretty awesome, actually. Not many people I know have actually completed a mathematics degree. I know that my degree is in screenwriting, and this is probably the closest I've come to anything that my degree has touched on. So I've worked IT and operations most of my career, so I definitely feel you there.
Yeah, math has always been my passion, and it's going to sound really corny, but it's because it's basically the same in every language. Like, absolutely. No matter cultural differences, like numbers. I mean, besides like the whole metric system and whatnot, that's like different. But for the most part, numbers don't really change.
Well, I've always been a big fan of math myself, although I tended to follow the art side of things. So I finished calculus in high school, mostly to avoid having to do math in college. And then I lost most of it over the ensuing years and have regretted most of that for the last decade or so myself. So,
yeah, I struggled. The amount of time between taking Calc 2 and Calc 3 was 4.5 years.
You lose so much in that time.
it was a huge learning curve, among trying to just like figure out my life and starting over and yeah, insanity really.
So, you're working with the tech sector nonprofit. Sounds like you were doing some STEM education there as well. Anything that really stuck out to you in that first Portland job?
It was good to be in a place where I finally could be out and I felt safe enough to be out and then be able to basically like be an example and like make you feel safe to be out. So that was really cool. Majority of my job was back end. I did program operations remotely, overseeing 8 cities and working with the teams across the nation. But the work that I did specifically in Portland was a little bit more front facing, where I actually worked with 2 middle schools in the Milwaukee area, and did STEM like physically in the schools. And so that was really cool, being able to work with youth, especially queer youth, and basically make sure that they felt safe enough to be out was really great for me.
It's nice to know that that's starting to be addressed as we're getting through the school, to make sure that people feel safe no matter how they identify. What led you to get to the job with Operation Nightwatch?
Yeah, I was looking for a job. I was in the job market and really researching nonprofits in Portland. I still didn't fully know a whole lot about the nonprofit sector in Portland because I was so busy with my job and school and not really having much of a social life. But yeah, I ran across it on LinkedIn and just researched it from there and realized that it was an organization that worked with the unhoused community and kind of reminded me of the work that I was doing in Longview, the work that I was doing in California, the work that I had done since I was 10 in Hawaii, and kind of just gave me a reaffirmation, I guess, of my true passion and of like making a difference with the unhoused community. And so I researched and I prepped and I had the interview. And what's really interesting is that the interview was at St. Stephen's, where we are based out of. And I remember pulling up to a church and being very scared. Not for the interview, but the fact that I was like stepping into another church. And I didn't know anything of the church. I was like, oh no, are they affirming? Are they not? Like, how is this going to go down? And once I had come out in Longview, I kind of promised myself and everyone that was close to me that I would never go back in the closet. And so even in my personal website, even on LinkedIn, even in my cover letter, when I apply to jobs, it literally says that I'm queer because I don't ever want to be in a situation where I have to hide again. And so even though I knew that Operation Nightwatch was well aware that I was queer, I was still scared and still nervous. And then I saw a rainbow flag and I was like, oh, these are my people. Like, it's going to be okay. And Operation Nightwatch is not a like religious based organization. There's no religious affiliations. They just so happen to have the space in St. Stephen's, and a lot of different churches faithfully, very very faithfully support Operation Nightwatch. Whether that's with a portion of their tithes come directly to us so that we can feed the unhoused community. Whether it's coat drives, gloves drives, sleeping bags, I mean, there's a very faithful community that supports Nightwatch, even though we are not faith-based. And I learned that quickly on, and it was crazy to see. It was crazy to see because for the first time, I was immersed in a situation where people of faith and people who are queer, like myself, were kind of like merged together toward a common goal, and it didn't actually matter. Like, it didn't matter if there was differences on faith. It didn't matter if there was differences on sexuality and all of the things. It was, we have a need in this community, and so let's like work together and fill the need. And so for me, that was really, really inspiring and really, really affirming that I can, one, love Jesus and be gay, but also that I can be queer and still serve in a nonprofit role.
I'm very glad to be hearing that.
Yeah, I was nervous. I was nervous for a hot minute because that's not something that I had grown up to believe. It's not something that I grew up seeing. And so I was like, can I actually serve the unhoused population, a population that's extremely diverse, even though I'm queer, even though I'm brown, or even though all these things. And so it really has just done wonders, I think, just personally, for my professional career, and just having that confidence that, oh, I can do this, and actually, like, it'll be really good. I was actually speaking to a board member today about my first experience after getting hired at Operation Night Watch. And my first experience being at our direct service program. And one of our guests came up to me who's very much out and gay. And he was like, I'm so happy that you're here. And I'm so happy that the organization is led by queer people. And I was like, oh, this is crazy. I'm happy too, but I didn't expect to hear that the people that we were serving would also be happy, because I was still like scared and I was still uncertain. And really, I've only been in this position for like 90 days, but it's been really good to build such strong relationships this fast, knowing that we're creating an environment that is mentally, emotionally, and physically safe for all people.
What I've always been surprised about with religion and Christianity in particular, since it's the majority of what I see in our, you know, as I've grown up in this country as well, is that it always preaches, you know, love your neighbor, do unto others what you would have them do unto you. So I never understood the hatred and dismissal side of it. So it's nice to know that there is that openness in the community and that you're getting to actually experience that now.
Yeah, me too. And I wrestled a lot with it, both on like the faith side and the non-faith side. And you're right, it comes to one conclusion, right? Like love. Whether you're religious or not, everyone like can agree that like love is something that's good, hate is something that's bad.
And you would think that we could all agree to that anyway.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. we've seen in a recent event that that's not always real. But for the majority, at least now we are certain that the majority of people believe that love is good. So
your work with Operation Night Watch has included expanding the DEI, or the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion programs, in case people don't know that abbreviation. Is there anything that you've really been focused on with those?
Yeah. The first week that I started at Night Watch, you know, I'm trying to like learn all the things that I can and figure out like what is a priority that like needs work now. And really DEI was just like screaming at me. The Black Lives Matter movement had like resurfaced and it was very real, especially in Portland. And there's a lot of like Black representation among the unhoused community. And I quickly realized that we hadn't issued a like statement of solidarity And so that went out really fast, with me and the board working together to issue a statement, because I felt like it was very important, especially with for our guests, that they knew that they were supported in this. I have a stepbrother who's Black. My stepdad is Black. And that was a really, it's just been like a whole ordeal, like I'm sure for everyone else also. And so I just felt like it was really important. It was really personal to me. It was personal to a lot of our guests. And so we released that very quickly. From there, I was like, well, we also have a lot of queer guests and we don't have a statement of inclusion. And so that went out really quickly also. And you know, these statements that were made, it wasn't that Operation Nightwatch wasn't already living it out. From the very first day they opened their doors, they've been a very inclusive organization. It's just it hadn't happened formally. And so it was really just like a formality so that people couldn't question whether or not they were supported. But it was very much so a priority from day one.
That verbal recognition really means a lot. Did you notice people respond to those statements?
I did. A couple of people had, like, talked to me about it and, like, thanked me for the effort. And it was really hard, too, because it's like, I don't want the recognition. I just want you to feel supported. And so that was a really hard balance. But for the most part, I think I didn't get any pushback at all from anyone in the organization from top down. And it was something that we all agreed on. It was something that we all knew was very important and something that really should have already been happening. But no, we didn't get any negative backlash at all. And then anything that was came in was very positive and very much so appreciated.
And have you noticed an increase in the unhoused population over the course of this year?
I mean, visually, yes, but not necessarily in our programs. It's been really hard because of COVID and COVID restrictions. Our program doesn't really look like how it was intended to be. Our program helps with immediate survival needs, but that's not the mission of Nightwatch. The mission is that we would build relationships so that people would have community connection and increase in dignity. And because of the social distancing and whatnot, we had to move our program outdoors, which is extremely difficult, especially now as we head into winter, to have program outside and not allow our guests to have like refuge from weather. That's been really hard. And then also not really encouraging people to congregate has been hard because so much of our program is based off of conversation. Is based off of having a meal with people. Pre-COVID, we do game nights together. We have movie nights. And so it's just really hard because the program looks really different. Every week our numbers are growing more and more. But it's just really difficult right now.
Are there things you would like to be able to do? Like you said, there are the movie nights and these other gatherings. Is there a way to get a bigger space or somebody facility could help out to allow that where you could still include the social distancing, or is it just not feasible right now with all of the COVID struggles?
Honestly, it's not feasible with our budget. It's not feasible for us to be able to afford to rent a space large enough to be able to social distance accordingly. We can't even have like the normal amount of volunteers because of social distancing and whatnot. Because the space is really not that large. It's like a dining hall, really, is what it is, or like a multi-purpose space. But it's not it's not super large. And so we've actually been looking and unfortunately have been coming up short in trying to find a space where we can run program the way that it was intended to run. But it's hard because a lot of our guests miss like the connection that they had, miss being able to sit down at a table and have a meal. Right now we're serving just like on the sidewalk at the corner of 13th and Clay, where there is really not even a parking lot, no space to congregate. It's just people lining up on the sidewalk, 6 feet apart, grabbing food and then like having to walk away. And it's been really hard, especially for like our staff, because this is like, these are relationships that they've built for years and years, and volunteers who have been a part of Operation Night Watch for years and years, now not being able to even volunteer or even have like full conversations with people. So I wish that there was a space that we could do this better in. I wish that there was a way to keep everyone safe and abide by COVID restrictions, but still get people inside. I don't know. It's really hard because I wrestle with this a lot personally as a leader of this organization, knowing that the people that we serve deserve more, deserve better than what we can give them. We just don't know what else to do.
I'm sure that providing those meals and a place to sit down, conversation, and like you said, dignity and respect, was a big part of the program, especially with the mental health focus and knowing that so many people, so many of the unhoused population struggle with those issues.
Yeah. And we have a mental health initiative that really sets our program apart from others, where people who are in crisis or not, they're usually in crisis when they use like are part of our mental health initiative, but basically it's drop-in mental health services where they can come and talk to one of our staff members. And that hasn't really been able to happen during program hours because there's no space to privately talk. There's no space to talk where you can also social distance. And so that's really hard because a lot of people are, especially as you get to the holidays, more of our guests are going to have, I guess, situations where someone to talk to would be extremely beneficial. And we just don't have that capacity right now.
The holidays are always one of the hardest times. And like you said, that's coming up just around the corner now. So I can imagine all of this, being out and alone and not having those normal avenues is going to really play a part in this winter's houselessness.
Yeah. It's going to be really hard. If our program continues the way that we have for the first part of COVID, it's going to be heartbreaking. Just because like, we put up a pop-up tent and we're serving these people, right? People who like have become friends, people who are people and deserve so much. And then we say, oh, stand in the rain or the ice or the snow or the wind, 6 feet apart while we are just handing you things. And then like, hopefully that's enough. And then like you go and go back into the weather and like literally no refuge, and that's going to be extremely difficult, I think.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and it sucks. Like, these are people that we've like grown to care about, because simply they're people. And I don't know, it's going to be a rough season ahead, but hopefully we can think of a creative solution where we can offer something more.
Things like this is one of the things that really drives my belief in the universal basic income that like Andrew Yang and his team was really trying to put forward. Is there anything you guys are doing as far as fundraising goes right now, or any way that people can kind of help out?
Yeah, we fundraise all year long. People are welcome to go on our website. right now, like many other nonprofits, we're part of the Give Guide campaign and the Give Guide fundraiser, where there are, I guess, like different incentives that you get if you donate. And that's our biggest fundraiser of the year. It's extremely important for our like overall annual budget. And it's extremely important, especially right now in COVID, because there's a lot of expenses that have come up that weren't really expected. And so we really need a successful campaign to be able to still serve the community that we serve. Our fundraising goal is $30,000 this season, and that ends at the end of December. And so we are just trying really hard to meet our goal because it's absolutely necessary.
And you said you're part of the Give Guide fundraiser that's going on. What other organizations are part of that with you?
Like more than 130 other nonprofits that are based in Oregon or like Portland area. There's a lot. There's a lot of different organizations that are a part of it. I think that the overall Give Guide campaign across, I want to say 10,000 donors is $5 million is their hope. Yeah. And so it's a really large, large fundraising campaign and something that we are very, very, very fortunate to be a part of. Not every nonprofit is able to be a part of it. So we're very thankful for it, for sure.
On this, what do you think is the biggest challenge you guys have had this year? Is it just dealing with the COVID struggles, or is there something specific that's come up?
I think this year has been primarily COVID and it being really difficult to ask people for money and donations when really everyone is struggling right now. And that's really hard. And because of COVID, not being able to do programs the way we want to do programs and not being able to have conversations and build full relationships with people, I think has been extremely, extremely difficult.
I'm definitely curious if there's going to be a drop in the population as the weather continues to get worse in the Portland area, if they start to head south. And now with all these programs not being able to do what they would normally do to help out, I wonder if some of those familiar faces are going to start going away.
Yeah, and that's a harsh reality. That's a really hard thing to kind of like wrestle with. Because we want our guests to like be able to find a higher quality of life wherever that is, but it's also really hard because these are people that have lots and lots of relationships with people of Night Watch, whether that's volunteers or staff. But I don't know. We haven't seen that yet from anyone that we serve. We haven't really heard of a lot of people that are moving south. A lot of people that we serve don't really have the capacity to be able to find their way to California. Operation Night Watch is very unique from other nonprofits because we're a low-barrier organization. And so a lot of people who might not otherwise qualify for services of other nonprofit organizations would be welcomed at Night Watch. So whether that's people that have severe mental health or are actively struggling with addiction or have like just temper issues or whatnot, they're still welcome. And so we work with a lot of people that don't even have the access or resources available that someone else that's unhoused may have. So we serve an extra vulnerable population for sure.
Well, as we're getting towards a little bit closer towards the end of this, I was wondering if you had any tips you would like to share with people for how to help make the world a little bit better place.
I mean, similar whether we're talking about the unhoused community or not, just remembering that people are people regardless of socioeconomic status, regardless of how they look, how they identify, where they come from. Like, people are people, and people deserve to be loved. And I think that, especially in COVID, people having a little bit more grace and a little bit more patience, knowing that everyone is going through a hard time right now, I think would change a lot of things.
That's definitely been how you've lived your life, having to navigate a lot to get to where you are. Is there something that keeps you motivated?
I think just knowing that I am, I guess, I don't know how you say, I'm just grateful, I guess, for my journey, even though it hasn't been necessarily an easy one. But like, very, very grateful. And just, I sometimes like sit in awe at the disbelief of how much things have changed and how, I guess, how good things are. Like, when you actually have the space and safety to be yourself, how much of a weight that's lifted off, even though other things may be chaotic. Like, I think that just remembering the journey is really helpful for me, and knowing that it's not over, that there's still lots to come, lots of people to serve, lots of improvements on myself that are still going to happen, makes me really excited for just like the future.
Is there anything specific that you're excited about, or changes you're trying to make, either personally or within the organization?
Good question. I actually proposed to my fiance last week.
Congratulations.
That's a thing. Yeah, so I'm excited for that on a personal level. not super excited to plan a wedding for COVID, but we'll see how that works out. That might, I have no idea the timeline because of COVID. So that'll be interesting, but we're really excited just for the future with her and just what's to come for both of us. And then on a professional level, I think that I'm really excited. We have a couple of, we have one new program starting in January with Nightwatch that I am very excited for. We received funding through the Myers Memorial Trust Foundation, where we are going to be able to offer a separate program, the same program that we currently have, but like specific hours for unhoused guests who are female identifying or non-gender conforming. And I think that that will be a really, really cool program, and a program for like a even more vulnerable sector of the unhoused community, where they can be safe to just be themselves and talk about issues that are more specific to females or non-gender conforming folks. So that's super exciting.
Sounds like it. Is there anything that still scares you personally or professionally?
I don't know personally if things scare me. I sometimes wonder if I'm like living a dream and I'm going to wake up back in Longview. That's scary.
That would be scary.
But besides that, I mean, not much personally. I think what scares me with like Nightwatch is just not being able to find a better solution for winter. and even beyond winter, because I don't know how long this COVID restrictions and like the pandemic's going to last. And I think that's really hard for me, not knowing the answers, not being able to tell our unhoused guests when we'll be able to go inside, when we'll be able to get back to normal. And so just uncertainty, I think, is what makes me fearful.
How do you overcome those kind of fears? What keeps you coming back day to day?
I think just knowing that regardless of what we do, even if we come up short, every encounter that we have with our guests is life-changing and impacts them directly and impacts us, really. I think that knowing that there are always, in the nonprofit sector, is extremely difficult because there will always be people who need more. There's always going to be people who are in need of your service, who need your program. And especially right now when there's so much uncertainty, just knowing that what you're doing is really the most you can do right now. And they know that, our guests know that they're loved. Our guests know that we appreciate them, that we value them. And so I think that keeps me going as like the leader of this organization, because I know that the work that we do isn't in vain and that the work that we do is changing lives, even when we don't necessarily see those super tangible outcomes. But we know that our guests may be unhoused, but at Night Watch, they have a home and they've chosen to make us their home. And yeah, that's really, really cool.
I love that. Now, do you have, I guess, what's the proudest moment you have while working for this job so far?
Proudest moment? I don't know. I mean, 90 days in, I don't know.
How about proudest moment you have in your life so far?
Oh, man. way to hit me with a not easy question. Proudest moment. I don't know. I think that like there's not a specific moment, but more so, I guess, a lifestyle or mentality that I am really proud of. I feel like I've done a good job at being a voice for people, but more so like being able to stand in and stand up for marginalized communities, including myself, especially when it's hard, especially when the human rights climate and the political climate, all these different things goes against that, that I am not afraid to speak up for things that I know are good and that I know are necessary, even when there will be backlash, even when I know friends may be really mad at me or family may be really confused and don't understand. Like, regardless of those things, I think that I have done a good job speaking up and like just being able to give a voice to those who don't have it or can't have it, or whatever that looks like. And so I've devoted my life serving marginalized communities, and I don't see that ever changing. So,
well, I for one am very glad that you have, and that we have you here on the side of the good. How would you like to see yourself remembered, let's say 30 years down the line?
Oh, man. I mean, similar. I hope that, I guess, I'm remembered as someone that wasn't afraid to speak up, even when what I was saying wasn't the popular opinion or whatnot. I want to be known as someone that made a difference in a people's lives, specifically people who are often overlooked and passed by. I hope that, I hope that that comes through. I hope that I am making a difference, and that 30 years from now, I'm still making a difference, and that it's very evident. And yeah, I hope that the people that I encounter today are impacted by myself and Nightwatch.
Do you have any last words or anything else you would like to share? Any personal shout outs or anything before we get going?
Not necessarily, but thanks for having me on. Thanks for giving me just the opportunity and space to share more about myself, my journey, Operation Nightwatch, and all the good that's happening there. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate having you. And I really look forward to sharing your voice with everybody out there. I will make sure to include links so that they can find Operation Nightwatch and hopefully help increase the Give Guide fundraiser that you've got going on. Thank you again. You're very appreciated. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. I want to give a special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us and subscribe to us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. If you can, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Every podcast says that because it really does help spread the word. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. Thanks again, and have a blessed day.